the tabletop takeaway.
Game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop takeaway.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And we are continuing our series in real-time games with a disclaimer, because first off, we picked a game that I worked on, Skyrockets, Festivals of Fire. And this is one I was hired by Floodgate Games to develop kind of a sequel to Kites by Kevin Hamano. And the goal with this one was basically we're trying to make a big series of campaign like mini games that you can play based on the Kites system, which, if you haven't played Kites, you are flipping colored sand timers and cooperatively trying to keep them going by playing cards that match the sand timer colors, and then you flip those sand timers over. And so in Skyrockets, you start with a basic game that is pretty similar to how Kites works. And then there's these tarot-sized cards that show you each different little mission you're trying to go on. And it was super fun to develop. I basically threw every possible idea I could at this game, and then we kind of clumped them together by themes. And for me, it was really easy to do testing because it's a real-time game, and it took only like 4 minutes per test.
Yeah, or, you know, it's really fast.
They're very fast. So,
Which is actually a pretty big deal in board game design specifically, because playtesting and iteration is such a huge part of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Short of the game, the easier it is to iterate makes it easier to expand and develop faster, which is nice. Mm-hmm. In theory.
Yeah. And like, coming off of a system that works really well and is fun to begin with from Kites was a fun starting point. And then I think, like, basically just figuring out how are different ways that we can use cards to, sometimes the cards are in your hand, sometimes they're out on the table, like spread out like solitaire, and you can only play the top card of a pile, or...
But you see the whole string too, which can kind of help you, quote unquote, plan ahead. But because, you know, there's multiple players, it's hard to really...
Mm-hmm.
You don't have perfect information, but you technically do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. And, you know, I was also playing with, like, information. How much can we talk? Mm-hmm. Most of the games you can talk openly about in your hand, but what's in your hand? Other times you can't say anything unless the countdown timer is empty, for example. Or, yeah. And the countdown timer was one big addition from Kites to this, whereas in Kites, you're just kind of like playing freely, and going faster is usually just better in that game. You can play cards as quick as you can going around in a circle. In Skyrockets, you do have to track this. One of the timers is always on a countdown track. You can only move that timer if it's actually empty. So it's kind of the reverse of the timers that are in the middle of the table. And that was like a way to scale it so that if it's a harder mission, this countdown timer will move faster. If it's an easier mission and we want to extend the time, then we put
the longer
timer on there. So that's one thing I didn't mention, is each color has a different amount of
different duration.
So it's like 30 seconds for the red timer, all the way up through the rainbow to purple is like 80 seconds, I think. So
yeah, so a pretty diverse set of timers, which can really change how you approach what you're doing. I really enjoy that you did so many different scenarios for this game, and I think that really adds a lot of kind of versatility, and you can really kind of, depending on how you're feeling, you can kind of approach it in different ways that day. And honestly, I love the score pad, that you can kind of just like have different, you know, okay, well, we're going to play maybe 6 different games, and we can just kind of hop around, and it has like every single scenario listed on the score pad, and you can get up to 3 stars. So if you don't make any mistakes, you get 3 stars, but every mistake you make where you do not flip one in time, you get 1 point deduction mm-hmm. until you're at zero, and then 0 points. But did you fail, or did you still put on a good skyrocket show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never felt like we failed if we got at least one star.
Yeah.
Yeah, we made it. Yeah, and we were playing around with lots of ideas of how should this scenario campaign thing unfold, and we thought, like, should it be a booklet and you have to make your way through in sequential order? And we came to the card idea as like a light, hey, they're numbered, like you probably want to go 1 through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Right.
But it also gives you the chance to just like randomize it and play a random scenario.
And if you end up with your favorites, like there's one where there was a wizard and I was the wizard and I really enjoyed that. Like that was a really fun thing. Whereas asymmetric where I knew all of the timers except everyone else didn't.
Yeah, because they're behind
a
box.
I'm managing the timers. Everyone else is feeding me cards to flip the timers.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's a fun take on that because...
Well, that one was also nice because, like, you would emphasize a particular color.
Right.
Like, you would say blue, for example. And then I'm like, okay, I need to play a blue, but I didn't know any of the other colors. So, you know, I play a card with two colors on it. Well, it flips the blue, but maybe it also flips the orange and it wasn't.
Which just started the thing. And so, I need to flip an orange.
Yeah.
That's an example of side effects.
Side effects.
Yeah, side effects.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Real quick, back to the star system too. That was inspired by Overcooked.
Oh, sure.
Played that video game. Another real time cooperative video game.
Easier to do in video games.
Yeah. Which I think we even covered as an episode.
No, we did Played Up.
We played up. Oh,
which
right.
Probably also inspired by Overcooked directly theme wise.
Yeah, theme wise, I think the designers of Played Up, I might be misremembering, but I think they said that. Unrailed was actually a big inspiration for them.
Oh, okay. Fun.
And Played Up.
So, yeah. Anyways, the idea of a star system, I think, is kind of nice for any of these kind of cooperative campaign-type games.
Oh, yeah.
Was also inspired by Codenames Duet.
Oh, sure.
Scott Eaton's version of Codenames that it has this, map, world map, and it's just a real simple, like, draw in the dot on the city that you're in, and you can branch out from there of where you want to go. And it doesn't really, it just has, like, a couple numbers on the spot that change how the mission will work for.
Oh, sure.
And it's just fun having some visual. So we thought about doing a world map for this, too. Like, oh, you're traveling around the world and doing different missions and, hey, go to this place, draw the mission card. Ended up not doing that, but
that's
I do like that, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, the interesting thing about this, I've played a couple of games that have sand timers, and there's a couple of different ways that it goes. Obviously, we played... Magic Maze, mm-hmm, where the sand timer... Actually, it's kind of a similar thing where, you know, you don't wait until the sand timer runs out. You flip it earlier. So the closer you are to the end, the sooner it's flipped. And this does have some of that in that, you know... But you have multiple sand timers. And the thing about the multiple sand timers is in Magic Maze, I felt a strong incentive to wait until the sand was all out.
Oh, sure.
Almost all out. So that we'd have the most amount of time on the next flip.
Yeah.
And in this game, because there are multiple sand timers and you don't want any of them to run out, you do have a reason to flip them earlier. It feels kind of like juggling.
Actually. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You have all these timers. You're trying to keep them in the air. You don't necessarily want them to get all the way to the end because then other timers might fail. But if you flip them sort of two-thirds of the way through... And then just with keeping in mind that you're going to need to flip them again soon, that also works, and that's a valid strategy. But yeah, so having the multiple timers sort of changes how you think about when to flip them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can lean more towards the middle ground instead of on one side or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, the other thing is the objective timer, the...
countdown timer.
The countdown timer. That one's interesting because... The objective of the game is to make that run out.
Right.
And often in other games, you know, you don't want that to happen. That's Or like in, even in Galaxy Trucker also has a countdown track where you can optionally flip the timer. But there, of course, when the timer runs out, then whoever is still building their ship needs, well, they need to hurry up before that happens. Mm-hmm. So it's still bad for them. But in this game, it's good.
Yeah, and we didn't get to this feeling in the particular scenarios we played, but there's somewhere, you know, that countdown timer color becomes like key to hold on to in your hand.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
we were kind of throwing them around willy-nilly because if you play it while that timer's active, it's just kind of like you threw it away.
Right, but you only flip one thing versus two, and that can actually be a nicely targeted flip.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, say you throw too many of those away and now you're running real low.
Right.
It's like, oh, no, that's our mission, though. We have to. Yeah. So.
And I think this really follows the same logic, too, of the paying attention to, and like having attention has a cost, right? Like, I can focus on so many things. I'm focused on this blue one because I see it's getting low, but because I'm focused on that blue one and I'm going to play a blue one, what if purple's also running out? And purple we can rely on because that's the 82nd. But like, if I just wasn't paying attention to that one, I'm getting ready to flip the blue and the yellow. And we did, like, okay, great. Yeah, the blue's going to be fine. Like, oh, God, there's that one. And you got to, like, really hurry. Like, okay, got it. Oh, I don't have a purple. Oh, no. Okay, play something.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting, like, how that focus and how that attention becomes such a big cost for the game itself as you're playing. Like, that's your resource.
But the cards are the... I mean, I guess the thing is the cards are the other resource.
Yep, yep.
Like, I think in the other games we've looked at... Well, I suppose. Okay, so in Magic Maze, you could do whatever you want,
right?
As long as it. Well, you could do whatever you want as long as it was one of your actions
within the bounds of the rules. Yeah,
and I guess in Dutch Blitz, you could only play a card if there was somewhere you could play it.
Right.
So maybe that one's also restricted. But in this game's a little, at least it's different than Magic Maze.
Yeah.
In that. You need to actually have the card in order to be able to flip the timer. So it's not just attention. You also have...
A limited... Or a specific supply of things you can do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do have
resources. You're not other just resources. Flipping the timers
right.
as they get lower. That'd be a very easy game.
Attention is not the only resource.
That's true.
Whereas
that's
I feel like in the other games, attention was the primary resource that you cared about.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. I think after playing it a lot... you know, developing it the whole time, but it had been a while since I played. And maybe my takeaway this time is the fact that there are, it's going to sound silly, but the fact that there are turns in this being a real-time game, I had to, after playing Magic Maze, I was like, wait, we were taking turns in this, right?
Yeah.
Because there are some modes where there is no turn order. But I think it's actually pretty interesting to have a real-time game where we are taking turns.
Yeah.
You have to do something on your turn. Yeah. And you might mess something up because of what you've done with your hand.
Well, and also the thing is, because the cards limit your actions, there are times when you don't have the color that the team needs to be played.
Right.
So you just need to play something, anything, as fast as possible so the next person can take their turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you also kind of get trapped in that, well, maybe I can do something that's beneficial. Oh, look, these two are running out. I have both of these two, but you don't look at the orange. You don't look at the other color that's also running out that's more in need. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you might be burning out a clock that you actually don't have. Mm-hmm. I noticed that a couple times where, like, we were focused on another one, and then all of a sudden this one's empty. It's like, oh, what?
Yeah.
But, like, it caught us all off guard.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to play it again and read through the different scenarios too. And some like stand out a lot, like because they're physically look very different on the table, like having all the cards splayed out, for example, or the timers behind the box, or the timers are stacking up.
Oh yeah, just have these little variances.
Yeah,
yeah.
And there's some I skipped over that were more just like rulesy changes. That's like, oh, they made more of a slight difference.
Oh, sure.
And yeah, I'm glad we have 30 different missions for people who want to dive in. But
well, and that's exactly my takeaway with co-op specifically. If you have a very simple core, right, of a game, having these different scenarios that you can unlock and unpack, I think makes the game a lot more interesting over the long term, because like just with Magic Maze, they have different scenarios as well. And I think that's definitely something you want to have in a co-op real-time game, so that you have this kind of more interest of like, and kind of revitalizing the game with each playthrough. And then even if you do get through all of them, maybe you're done then. And that's okay. But like, what if there was one that you really liked and you want to revisit it? Then you just can do that. And so you can have these different variances that are your favorites. And over time, you can get to kind of master those specifically, which I think is a really fun way to handle these kind of co-op real-time games.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I think, I guess my takeaway would be the sort of, oftentimes with real games, it's complete this task within this amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And this game kind of inverts that by saying, okay, you just need to survive,
mm-hmm.
Survive for this amount of time. And, you know, that's kind of a nice different way to look at it. So I think my takeaway would just be sort of a subgenre of real-time games where it is about survival. Like, get this timer to the end of the track and complete these and prevent these other bad things from happening in the meantime. And
yeah.
I don't know how you would achieve that without the setup of a bunch of sand timers, because sure. Obviously you need some sort of threat. Well, I guess actually, wait, Space Alert? I haven't played Space Alert.
There's a timer. There's an overall timer, I think, that's like an audio track.
Yeah, but is that like you have to survive, or is it you have to complete something before the track runs out?
I can't remember. It's been so long.
Okay.
But there's like aliens coming at you. I think you do have to keep the ship from dying.
Okay, so an audio track would be another way that you could manage this.
Kind of like audio track for things. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Escape. That's the other one we were talking about too. That's got the
Escape the Cursed Temple or whatever it is. And other games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have time be something. Have running out of time be something that you want to happen, as opposed to something that you don't want to happen. Because then you know you feel so much relief when the last few grains of your victory timer run out, instead of just dread.
Just dread.
Yeah. Did you say a takeaway, Trevor?
I did. Yes, that I did was the scenarios.
Scenarios, yes.
Yep, having multiple scenarios I think is really good for co-op.
Yeah.
Although I'd be curious if you can do scenarios for competitive. That could be interesting as well. I don't know if you need it necessarily, because in competitive, the other players are what create the challenge technically. And so, but I'd be curious about seeing that.
Yeah, in a competitive real-time game.
In competitive real-time.
Yeah, scenarios. Yeah. We were trying to think before the podcast of like, what are competitive real-time games that we've played lately?
I mean, Dutch Blitz.
Dutch Blitz,
yes. Games like that. I feel like maybe they're
There's a lot harder. More like poker, or not poker, but the standard card games like that, instead of actually like published games. I just think there's a few more of those in that genre.
It's Taco Cat, Goat Cheese Pizza. It's like just speed.
Trying to
hit the pile when there's a lot of speed games like there's, that.
What was that? Jungle something? You know what I'm talking about? There's the one game with, I think there's like a thing you have to grab in the middle. And
oh, the banana? Pops up in the middle and you have to grab.
No. Jungle something. I've forgotten the name.
Cobra Paw is another one that's kind of fun. Dice get rolled out and then you have to hit that specific domino with those two colors.
Yeah, a lot of those about just something happens and then you have to recognize something first and touch.
Yeah.
Which is pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a few pattern recognition style real-time games.
Yeah.
And, you know, to some degree, I guess any real-time game is going to be pattern recognition. Like in Dutch Blitz, the pattern is, okay, the numbers need to go up or the numbers need to go down and alternate.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Dutch Blitz is still a bit different than those other ones, because there's also the strategy of what you pay or, you know, where you spend your attention and
mm-hmm.
what sorts of things you go for. Whereas a lot of the time Yes, I mean, what you pay attention to is still part of the strategy, but it's less, okay, there are different sub-games that you can engage in.
Oh, yeah.
And more there's one game, it's just which part of the game are you looking at, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm following you.
Yeah.
I can't think lot like Dutch Blitz.
No, yes.
No.
Especially real-time.
Yeah.
You normally don't have sub-games of real-time games because focus is such an important resource. That like having you split focus can be very difficult unless the core is very straightforward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're having to manage something personally while playing Skyrockets, as well as like the group puzzle and a personal puzzle, that would be overwhelming.
Yeah. And believe me, we tried some things like that.
Yeah, I bet.
And all of those things mostly got cut in playtesting because it was like, wow, this is too much to look at.
I remember I playtested this a while back, and there was one that just wrecked my mind. And I don't know what it was, but there was just something about it. Like, I could not. Oh, you could use everyone else's cards, but not your own.
Oh.
That was one of the ones that was, like, being tested just to see if it would work. I don't know if it ever
made
the cut.
Like Hanabi style? Or you?
Well, but everyone just had the cards in front of them.
Oh, right. Hmm. Yes, I
and so, like, you're
too.
Looking across the table, seeing what everyone else has, but you can't pay attention to what you have.
Yeah.
But you can communicate with other people what you have.
Yeah.
But it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. Yeah, so, like, there's obviously, like, some little variants and things that really don't work with different systems.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to, like, have too many things going at once for some games is not going to be good. So, like, really finding the core of what your game is and then see if you can do multiple, like if it's a very simple core, having multiple ways to get there is a really cool thing, because then you can allow that split focus and you can feel really clever when you have that split focus.
Yeah.
It feels really good when you can do that. But don't make it complicated.
Yeah. I think I would love to see a game that's like somewhere in between this amount of speed and like a game where you could puzzle out a little bit more, spend more time thinking about, ooh, what's the best way to do this? Magic Maze felt a little bit like that when we were taking those breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd be cool to see something that's not just speed. Like, this one's pretty intense in terms of speed. We don't have that much time to think. But I'd love to see a game that we could think a little harder and figure out a better strategy by taking the more time on something.
And that was an interesting thing we were talking about, too, where precision over speed. I think we talked about for Blitz, was it? I can't remember. Blitz, you want to go fast.
Dutch Blitz, you want to go fast.
But there is something, too, about precision, because I skipped over a lot with Dutch Blitz because I was so focused on going fast and only paying attention to, like, two things. I skipped over several cards I could have scored on or gotten out of my posts and all that. So, like, finding the balance for your real-time game, I think, is really important and, like, how you're going to go about that. But we can talk about that in the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting into bonus episode territory here.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been holding off another thing too. So
this is good. We got lots to talk about in the next episode. Yeah. So with that is Skyrockets. Thanks for humoring me, guys, and trying this one out. Cause I thought it'd be fun to talk about one that was very appropriate to our theme that one of us worked on.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do that again in the future too.
Potentially.
You never know. Okay, cool. Till next time.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.